Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. There is going to be a very special Mother's Day in the Alaska State Governor's Mansion, where there is a new baby boy. His name is Trigg Paxson Van Palen, and he is a little boy with an extra chromosome. I wrote about him earlier this week. A lot of people have read the article. I've had some wonderful feedback to it, and it is one of those encouraging stories that comes along, and it's just perfectly timed for Mother's Day. Trigg was born on April the 18th to the governor of the state of Alaska. She and her husband already had four children. This is the fifth, and he is their second son, and he has Down syndrome. And the Palins have decided to keep him. They decided when he was diagnosed in the womb, in utero, as being a likely Down's syndrome baby. And there is just a lot of good news in this story. It's just perfectly timed for Mother's Day because it reminds us of a Christian understanding of motherhood. The Alaska governor and her husband have both been very clear about their pro-life sentiments, but it's one thing to make that very clear in an election race. It's another thing to make it clear in your life when faced with a challenge like this. And right now there's a little boy who is living in the Alaska governor's mansion, and he is a testimony to what can happen when people defy the culture of death and recognize human dignity. And his very proud mom and dad are now looking at this baby and thanking God for him. The background of this is something of a search and destroy mission going on, where there are some of these genetic tests now used in order to decide which baby should live and which baby should die, especially the question of which pregnancies will end in abortion because the prospective mother or the couple decides this baby just doesn't come up to expectation. And we know right now that approximately 80%+, between 80 and 90% by some estimates, of all babies diagnosed having a likelihood of Down syndrome are now aborted. The statistics are just very clear. The number of children born with Down syndrome significantly down from before, with no change in the disease or the syndrome, but rather a change in the technology that allows parents to know, or to think they know, prior to birth, that their unborn child is a Down carrier. We'll be talking about this, and it really is an opportunity for us to talk about a Christian understanding of motherhood, in particular the question of mothers in the giving of life, in terms of pregnancy, reproduction, in terms of what mothers do at the beginning, but also, of course, what mothers do throughout life. A very special Mother's Day in Alaska. I hope there's a very special Mother's Day for those of you out there who are, even now, mothers. And for all of us, well, if nothing else, those of you who are hearing the program right now, just remember, Sunday is Mother's Day. We'll be back to talk about that in a few moments. In order to join the conversation, give us a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, to review some issues in the news, from California comes a reminder of how government thinks. Headline in the Los Angeles Times, California tax proposals target beer-loving, pornography-watching yacht owners. Now, there's something to that, of course. A bit of sarcasm, perhaps, in the headline, but something of substance in the story. Democrats in the General Assembly there in Sacramento are looking for new tax revenue, and instead of raising taxes across the board, they're looking at raising sin taxes, or in the case of the yacht, a luxury tax. Let me just read to you from the article by Evan Halper of the Los Angeles Times. As state leaders hunt for politically palatable solutions to the swelling budget shortfall, some Democrats are proposing unorthodox ways to generate cash. Strip clubs, six-packs, grocery bags, and iTunes downloads are all on their sites as alternatives to broad income or sales tax hikes. So are gas guzzlers and yachts and a tax loophole for criminals. This is really, really interesting. I think in particular of what you're looking at with, for instance, taxes on beer, increased taxes on beer and pornography, or in this case, strip clubs. What you're looking at is the predicament of what happens when the government decides to raise revenue by taxing things it thinks it can get away with taxing. Now, frankly, on this program, I'm not taking any kind of a position as to whether strip clubs should be taxed. by my understanding and worldview, strip clubs are inherently immoral for what they represent. My point in raising the program has to do with the fact that when the state decides that it is going to increase a revenue stream by taxing something like this, it will only get that money if those things actually happen. In other words, the state puts itself in the position of benefiting only if persons actually indulge in these things. It is almost exactly what takes place and is now creating such complications in states that have cigarette tax income as a major portion of their budget. They raise the taxes on cigarettes. And yet the only way that they will actually get the income that they depend upon is if people are actually smoking. So the state has a very hypocritical posture on this, saying we're going to tax this, we hope you don't do it, but we really hope you will do it, because if you don't do it, we won't have the money we need in order to build roads and pay for the schools and all the rest. A tax code is a lot like the checkbook, the stubs left in your family checkbook when you look back over the month. You really find out what you believe in, and you really find out what you have as a set of priorities when you look at where the money went. And for a state government looking for tax revenue, you really find out a great deal about the whole worldview of those putting together the tax code when you see what is taxed and why. And a lot of conservatives will look at that and say, well, maybe that is a palatable way to come up with new revenue, tax something like that, because maybe it will disincentivize it. But the moment you think about disincentivizing it, you realize at that point the tax is worthless. Now, we live in a fallen world, and if you ever want evidence of Genesis 3, you might say two places that would be a good place to start would be to look in the mirror and look at the tax code. If you're looking at television, it's likely that you are aware that, as USA Today is reporting, after much anticipation on the set of ABC's Brothers and Sisters, a wedding cake has arrived. In this case, it is a gay wedding. It is the first gay marriage ceremony in primetime television. ABC is the network that has sponsored it. As William Keck writes in USA Today, this is no typical TV wedding. It's a gay commitment ceremony, the first same-sex union on American network TV between series regulars. Quote, it's all very progressive, evolved, and about time, said the actor Matthew Rice. It's a milestone, and I was really quite pleased that I got to be a part of it, echoes Calista Flockhart, who plays Kevin's big sister, Kitty. Well, it's very, very interesting. When you look at that, the liberal show attempts to recognize, according to this news article, those who oppose gay marriage by introducing one of the male partner's disapproving parents who skip the ceremony. Very interesting. They're also, the producers say, considering having the homosexual couple adopt a child. Quote, it would be interesting to go down the adoption route and see from a legal aspect how Kevin would campaign for that, says one of the actors, whose character is himself an attorney. Looking at other issues in the news, it's very interesting to see that, for instance, when it comes to single-sex education, even some who are opposed to it on ideological terms are having to come to terms with the fact that it appears to be working. The Boston Globe reports from Boston that when it comes to single-sex schools, that is, boys-only and girls-only schools, it seems that both the girls and the boys do better without the other present, at least in the middle school years. There is a flirt-free zone at the Mario Umana Middle School Academy in East Boston, where it turns out that this school for boys is finding that boys without girls actually are quicker to answer questions and do better in class discussions than if girls are present. Meanwhile, across the community in the girls-only middle school, teachers of the girls are reporting the same thing. And it turns out, perhaps in that period of early adolescence in particular, the presence of the other gender is such a distraction, not necessarily just in terms of the kind of stuff that might go on between kids that age, but the kind of thing that goes on when kids that age are trying to figure out who they are, and figuring out in front of someone of the opposite gender just might be a bit of a challenge that does impact the learning process. In Boston, there has been opposition, of course, to the single-sex schools, but parents are demanding them, and it turns out that the educators are finding that there is a utility to them as well, because both the boys and the girls appear to be doing pretty well. We began the program by talking about a mother, in this case, the governor of Alaska. I want to end by talking about a father. It's a father from Chicago, Joseph Richardson, a 39-year-old choir director, was walking home with his daughter, 4-year-old Kania, when a driver who has never had a driver's license lost control and went barreling towards them on the sidewalk. In this case, the father, Joseph Richardson, did what a father ought to do. He grabbed his daughter and lifted her out of harm's way, and he himself was killed as the car pinned him against the wall. Well, here's one man who's thankful for a father who gives this kind of a witness to what fatherhood's all about, and who paid the ultimate price in order to snatch his child from danger. He found himself on the front page of the Chicago Tribune, something that morning I'm certain he had no intention of doing, but in a moment, in an instant, when his character had to show, he did just the right thing, and God bless him for it. We'll be right back with your calls.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Governor Sarah Palin of Alaska, the Republican governor there, served since 2006. She's a rising star in the political scene and quite a family there in Alaska. She herself was a basketball star in high school, a beauty queen. In later years, her husband is a multiple times winner of the world's biggest and most famous snowmobile race. They are both hunters. They have a beautiful family. Until this year, they had a family of four with, that is, four children, a son, and then three daughters. And then on April the 18th of this year, Trigg Paxson Van Palin was born. And he is, of course, their fifth child and second son. Their eldest son, Track, who I guess is about 18 years old, serves in the United States Army. They have three daughters, Bristol, Willow, and Piper. Now, little Trigg made news long before he was born. And he made news because the Alaska governor, in terms of her prenatal care, underwent some tests that indicated the medical probability that Trigg had an extra chromosome. In particular, an extra chromosome that is an indicator of Down syndrome. Now, the background to this is what is unknown or at least unspoken in many circles. And that is that we are witnessing the end, perhaps, in this society, of babies being born with Down syndrome. Now, this isn't because we found a way to cure Down syndrome or to correct the chromosomal pattern prenatally. It's because the babies are being aborted. Just how big an issue is this? Well, let me read to you the lead article from the Weekly Standard, lead paragraph by Wesley J. Smith, and an article written just a few weeks ago. It says this: "It's a bitter irony that even as we are enlarging our commitment to human equality in many areas, we are turning our backs on it in others. In particular, we may be about to eliminate from our society people with Down syndrome and other genetically caused disabilities." In my article published earlier this week, I cite an expert who refers to what he calls a search and destroy mission, a seek and destroy mission into the womb in order to use genetic testing in order to determine which babies should not be born. And in the case of Trigg Paxson Van Palin, the test revealed that this little baby boy, unborn, carried that extra chromosome that indicated a likelihood of Down syndrome. A lot of people would have aborted. When I say a lot of people, what are we talking about? We're talking about between 80 and 90% by most estimates of babies diagnosed with Down syndrome being aborted, never being born. On this program, we've talked about this repeatedly because it is a big story. It's one of those developments in the culture that helps us to understand who we really are as a people. And it is one of the most frightening things I think about when I think about this culture and its direction. We're looking at the elimination of people who are just considered unworthy of coming to life. And we are living in a technological age in which so many things can be tested. It will not be long until, without doubt, people are going to be able to get a prenatal diagnosis of indications for everything from Down syndrome to potentially hair and eye color and perhaps even athletic ability and intellectual aptitude. What happens when parents say, no, that's just not good enough? By the way, there is pending legislation in the United States Senate, the Senate Bill 1810, which is sponsored by Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas, and I understand co-sponsored by Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts. That's an interesting pairing, that would require doctors giving these tests to indicate something of the positive aspects of life with a person with Down syndrome. That is a very interesting pairing. Sam Brownback, after all, is well known as a pro-life member of the United States Senate. Senator Edward Kennedy is certainly not pro-life, but he did have a sister named Rosemary who had Down syndrome, one of the multitude of the Kennedy kids. And so he has a personal investment in this issue. And insofar as he's on the right side on this issue, we should be very thankful. But we need to recognize that this bill is not calling for an end to this testing. It's not calling for a prohibition of abortion for those who are given this diagnosis. It's simply calling for some good news to be given to them, that living with a child with Down syndrome is not overwhelmingly negative. The background of this is that 23% of physicians or genetics counselors said that when they speak with parents, they emphasize the negative aspects of parenting. It's the parents who are saying that when they have talked to physicians or genetics counselors, and that they felt urged to choose abortion. Well, I'm really moved by this story, I have to tell you. And I'm really moved by the response of the Palins to this. An amazing family. They have to be an amazing family. The wife, the governor of the state of Alaska, the husband, a well-known figure also there in Alaska. They have four children. They're kind of the poster family of the state of Alaska. And, you know, a lot of people who are coming up with a poster family would say, well, let's airbrush out the child with Down syndrome. But God bless the Palins. They're not doing that at all. Right before the world, they're saying we're proud of him. They're saying when we look at him, he looks perfect. And there's just something incredibly sweet about that, and something that certainly deserves our attention on this Friday before Mother's Day 2008. To join the discussion, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, and Jim is listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Mohler. I want to let you know, my wife and I, we have three beautiful children, and all three are very intelligent. And you know what's interesting? My youngest, Jacob, who's 3 and a half, he has Down syndrome. The young man at 2 years of age knew sign language, and, you know, he, for all intents and purposes, he's bilingual. You know, that's saying more than what I'm capable of doing. Every night I'd come home, and he'd learn a new sign language, and I'd have to have my wife translate it for me. And it just infuriates me, and it hurts me to think that our society would prefer to abort that beautiful boy. And even our doctor said, you know, there were options. And, you know, the only option was to abort him, and, you know, my wife has run into the doctor and has shown him pictures of our son and said, would you have aborted this little guy? Look at him. He's beautiful. And, you know, he's been just a pure blessing to us.
You know, and, Jim, thank you so much for that call. And I have to tell you, your call encouraged me at several levels. One, of course, comes down to the words you spoke. So clearly affirming your own son as a father and your thankfulness for him. But I got to tell you, the other thing I appreciate in your voice is just the eagerness as a father to talk about your son. Because I think that's what a lot of people miss in this, is that they think, if we did have a child with Down syndrome, we'd be ashamed to talk about this child. We would talk about this child perhaps in a lower voice. We would acknowledge having this child, but this is not the child that we would put forth perhaps in our poster vision of what a family should look like. But I can tell from your voice it's exactly the opposite with you, Jim, and I really appreciate that. And I know so many other people who also have Down syndrome children or Down syndrome siblings just friends who they know who have Down syndrome, who say, look, you know, what my life would be without this child, without this brother or sister, without this friend, is something I don't even want to contemplate. And we're looking at the fact that given the intersection of technology and the availability of abortion, 80 to 90% of babies diagnosed right now with Down syndrome as a likelihood are simply being aborted. And on this program some months ago, when we talked about this, I cited a report from an obstetrician gynecologist in California who said he simply woke up one morning and realized that he had not delivered a child with Down syndrome in a very long time. And just given the odds, that can't add up. And then he realized, well, there had been several babies diagnosed with Down syndrome, but the mothers were just never seen after that. And that was rattling the cage even of that physician. It ought to greatly trouble us as a society in terms of what we're saying. Remember that back before the rise of the Nazis in the Weimar Republic in Germany, the medical establishment came up with what they called a principle of life, Lebens und Wertens, Lebens, life unworthy of life. And we are walking right down that road, starting with where the technology is allowing us to make decisions. As Jim said, when doctors say we have options when it comes to Down syndrome. To join the conversation, call me at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. It is very interesting. Wesley Smith is exactly right when he is a bioethicist to suggest that it's very, very strange and troubling that at this particular time, when we have human dignity being recovered in so many areas of life, we now have it being subverted when it comes to children with Down syndrome. And that's what makes the announcement of the birth of Trigg Paxson Van Palen in Alaska such a heartwarming thing, because here you have a very public family, the governor of Alaska with her husband, here welcoming this little boy into their lives as their fifth child and making very clear that they understood they did, as the medical authorities say, have options. But it wasn't an option for them because they were absolutely committed to bringing this child to life, to receiving him as God's gift, and the pride that this couple is showing in him is absolutely infectious. I don't know if you've seen anything of the media coverage of the press conference they held where they introduced their little boy to the world, but it has really made the news not only in Alaska but elsewhere. And it certainly is against the backdrop of the fact that between 80 and 90%, it is believed now, of all babies who are diagnosed before birth with the likelihood of Down syndrome are being aborted. And this is alarming people. It's alarming people even on both sides of the abortion issue in America. That's why, for instance, this Senate bill introduced by Sam Brownback is co-sponsored by Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts. I mentioned that Senator Kennedy had a vested interest in this. I'm going to get to that in a moment, but I want to invite you to call and join the program. I'd love to know what you're thinking about this, especially with Mother's Day on the horizon. There's a very special Mother's Day in Alaska, and in particular in the governor's mansion this year. And there are just all kinds of wonderful Mother's Days going on across this country. We'll be on Sunday, as it is observed by families who have a child with Down syndrome. And that very, very warm and inviting face is going to be a face thankful for his or her mother and for the fact that he or she was brought to life on this Mother's Day. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're always glad to hear from you by email. You can just go to albertmohler.com, hit the mail button, and it will get to us, or send from your own mail service to mail@albertmohler.com. We'll be glad to get as many of your calls and email messages on the air as is possible in this hour. The background to this is, of course, as we have said, the fact that there was considerable shame for a great deal of time, and for some families, perhaps even now, in terms of having a child with Down syndrome. And in terms of the 20th century, one of the things we learned is that when we find those of whom we will not even speak, we are undercutting the dignity of their lives. There are some amazing stories back in this. Just last year, it was discovered that Arthur Miller, the famous playwright, had a son who was born with Down syndrome. The son was named Daniel and is now alive and 41 years old. It is a son produced with Arthur Miller and his third wife, Inga Marath. And it turns out that Arthur Miller simply could not deal with the fact that this boy had Down syndrome, put him away in an institution, and did not even mention his existence in his memoir. The boy's existence was found only when the playwright's will was probated. And then, of course, you do have the story of Rosemary Kennedy, one of the daughters of Joe Kennedy, and when you start looking at this, Joe and Rose Kennedy had so many children who are well-known in American history, but Rosemary, their daughter, is not well-known, and she, at the end of her life, was also institutionalized. And that's why I think Senator Edward Kennedy has such a personal investment in this as well. Let's go to Richard, calling from Elizabethtown, Indiana. Go ahead, Richard.
Dr. Mohler, pleasure to talk to you, sir. I listen to your show every day. Just wanted to mention, I do have a Down syndrome daughter. She's 19, and actually, the night that we delivered her, not knowing that she was Downs, they did want to take her away from us, and we refused that immediately because we thought it was God's will that we had this child, and we were going to take care of it no matter what. And I just wanted to mention that my wife has actually counseled quite a few parents that have found out that they did have a Down syndrome in the womb, and surprisingly enough, because she told them how great our child was, that she actually talked them out of aborting the child, and they ended up keeping the child. And we still get letters from those parents that have kept that child and how wonderful it is and how blessed they are to have that that Down syndrome child. I just wanted to tell all the people out there that if they do find out early, that it's not a burden to them. It's not a, you know, any big hassle or anything to raise these children up and be God-loving children as they should be.
That's such a kind and clear word, Richard, and I really appreciate it. And I wish for you and your family a wonderful Mother's Day on this Mother's Day, but also all the joy you have in having that wonderful daughter who you have welcomed so warmly into your home. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from you. I'd especially love to hear from some Christians willing to say, here is how I would make the argument. I appreciate very much what Richard had to say, saying that he and his wife have had the opportunity to counsel with parents who are deciding whether or not to abort a child diagnosed with the likelihood of Down syndrome. Well, let's put yourself in that position. What would you do? What would you say? The reality is that there may be any number of persons, with or without Down syndrome children of their own, who will be finding themselves in a position of talking to a couple or to a mother who is in the situation of making what now is presented by medical authorities as a decision. It's a decision that wasn't even presented to people in times past because the technology did not allow the information to be known. And it was a choice that wasn't a choice until the legalization of abortion. You put those two things together and you have what, again, some medical ethicists are calling a search and destroy mission going on in many wombs, all coming down to genetic indicators. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. The mail address is mail@albertmueller.com. Always glad to hear from you. Join the discussion. We do have, in this situation of Down syndrome, a reality in which there are many people who are told their baby is likely to have Down syndrome only to find out that it was a false positive. It is very, very interesting. In fact, just now I'm receiving an email from a listener who says that she is now pregnant with a baby. And early on she was informed that the baby had a very high chance of being a Down's baby. But she went on and said that she considers this child a precious gift from God, would never consider tossing him in the trash, she said, because he's not considered perfect. But she goes on to say that further testing has shown that he probably is normal, that in quotation marks, though we will not know for sure until the birth. But either way, we will still adore him and treasure him. A couple things out of this. Number one, what this writer, Jenny, is saying is very clearly that she is absolutely determined, along with her husband, to receive this child, adore him, and treasure him. Beautiful words there. But the other thing is just a reminder that in many cases, these tests are false positives. There are people out there who are aborting children based upon a knowledge that may not even be so. And that's a scary thing unto itself. You know, the whole issue of Down syndrome, and especially when you start dealing with the question of making an answer to someone dealing with this issue of Down syndrome or any kind of genetic malformity that many people may diagnose, the issue is how you would frame a response. And a response that's distinctively Christian is going to have to reach back to something deeper than "you ought not to do this." Let's go to John calling from Brainerd, Minnesota. Listen on XM170. Go ahead, John.
Hey, I just wanted to say that bless you guys for doing what you're doing and speaking the way that you are. And I think that this is all stemmed from, you know, being taught in the schools. These children are taught that life isn't really worth anything. It's just, you know, come from explosion. And without that idea that God has created us and loves us because he created us for his joy, there just doesn't have any, there's no life worth.
You know, John, I think the most important thing from your call is the reminder that God has to be brought into the equation, and in particular, in the grounding of human dignity. Because any effort to ground human dignity in nothing more transcendent than the human being is going to lead to frustration. Because then if we can define our own dignity, if we are the ground of our own dignity, if we have human dignity because we decide we do, then we can decide that we do not. Or we can decide that there are certain among us who do not. That's the whole story of the 20th century, regrettably and tragically. But the Christian response has to be, and as we were just talking before John began to speak, I mentioned that there has to be something deeper than the simple statement, you ought not to do this. And the something deeper has to begin in the fact that every single human being is made in the image of God. That distinctive starting point of Scripture that says the human beings are not indeed accidents, and they are not just animal creatures, but are the distinctive and unique creature made in the image of God. That's the starting place of an argument for human dignity. And if it is an argument for human dignity, then it is an argument for human dignity for every human being. And that's what is so important. In other words, if indeed the ground of our human dignity, and thus the argument for the sanctity of human life, comes down to the fact that human beings are made in the image of God, alone of all creation, we are the beings able to consciously know and glorify God. If that is indeed the basis of the argument, the foundation of the argument, as I believe it must be, then we have to recognize that that extends to every single human being. We have to look back through human history and see that the human race is woefully, woefully guilty of deciding that certain of its own members simply do not meet muster for human dignity. We have the most obvious cases, such as the medical ethics of the Weimar regime in Germany, certainly adopted by the Nazi regime, in which you have Lebens und Wertenslebens, you know, life unworthy of life. And, of course, that was assigned to groups that the Third Reich eventually wanted to get rid of, including Jews and homosexuals and persons with Down syndrome and the grotesquely handicapped, as some were classified, and others who were just considered to be racially and physically inferior. And we look back at that in horror, and appropriately so. But the reality is that there are many people who look at the Nazi genocide with horror, look at the Nazi medical experiments with absolute revulsion, and yet we are blind to the fact that very similar things are going on right in our own communities. And it's not so open and blatant as what went on in Nazi Germany. Instead, it can be very quiet and private and in a professional setting, where genetic testing is now giving people information, and then couples or mothers are being told, you have options. You know, one of the things as Christians we need to get out of this is the reminder that there are certain things we have to keep in mind when it comes to children and when it comes to pregnancy. And one of the things we have to keep in mind is that we have no options. In other words, if we enter into this, then we're playing the same game. A very recent author has written a book entitled The Tentative Pregnancy, suggesting that we're now in an age in which most people consider pregnancy now tentative. If the baby or the pregnancy turns out or looks positive, looks to be what will be convenient, well-timed, looks to be what will fit within the larger set of priorities, if the baby looks like everything is going well, then the pregnancy can continue and the baby may be born. But in the age of the tentative pregnancy, it's really up to the baby to prove that he or she is worthy of being born. And perhaps even that the context is right for the birth to take place, that the financial situation and all the rest is actually appropriate for him to be born. This is such a moral reversal of all of human history. And yet we're living in a time in which people are being told, you have options. One of the things we need to keep in mind is that when it comes to pregnancy, when it comes to a diagnosis like this, we're already headed down a dangerous road if we accept that we do have options. We'll be right back. That was a fascinating discussion, and one that needs to continue, and my guess it will continue around many dining room tables and in other places where families are discussing this issue. It's a good topic to get to those foundational and fundamental issues of human dignity and human worth. You know, when you talk about Mother's Day, the recognition on many parts is that you're really looking at a day that is of tremendous value to florists and those who are selling certain wares in the malls and greeting card companies. It is, in many cases, nothing more than an exercise in sheer sentimentality. And for that reason, a lot of people get kind of cynical about Mother's Day and say, it's got to happen, but send the card and let that suffice. Send a gift, take mom out to lunch, and we'll let that be it. You know, it is a sentimental opportunity. And we need to recognize that we are sentimental creatures. And so for that reason, just without embarrassment, celebrate Mother's Day. and make certain that as you do so, you do something that goes beyond sentiment to a genuine recognition that the glory of God is given to us in the form of mothers. And in their sacrifice and in their love and in their care, motherhood becomes parabolic for us for the very reason that the mother's love is one of the first experiences a child has. And the quality of that mother's love is one of the most important determinators of how that child will view the world. Salary.com is out with its annual estimate that the value of salary that should be earned by every mother is approximately $117,000 a year. Salary.com tries to put together all the things that mothers do and to put it into the complication and the computation of the wage scale, and it comes up with $117,000. Well, my guess is most of us who are husbands and most of us who are children will recognize that $117,000 wouldn't come close to doing what mothers do, because it's not just what they do, it's who they are. And it's not just who they are in terms of their genetic relationship to us, it is who they are in terms of how they define life for us and how they demonstrate the love of God to us from earliest ages and on. So when you think about Mother's Day 2008, realize, yes, it is an opportunity for sentimentalism, and that's all right. Be sentimental. That's one way of honoring mom. And especially all you husbands and sons out there, just remember, showing a little sentiment on Mother's Day is an indication that you really do know how to love your mom. But the other reality of this is, look beyond the sentiment to the reality of the glory of God in ordering our lives, in giving us mothers and fathers and the institution of marriage and of family, and recognizing that in that context, rightly ordered, the glory of God is shown not only to those who are within that circle, but also to those who are watching from the outside as well. Gospel witness through a family witness is something that is very important to the Christian faith. We'll be back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.